On my final question, I think the oath of Peter, while when the Lord Malusa Salam went to the Kamar Kiyasiri Lata Dabiji, was also standing from the board and make sure that Peter continued on the path that he has set for itself. Mm-hmm. On my right hand side is Mr. Tana Shetel, who is part of the business operations team. Mm-hmm. Next to him is Cisco Kanskak, who is the general manager and also in the business operations team.
Okay.
And then, of course, Sam Katina, who is looking after client services, TOD. And Tanya Abrams is from our, just here behind us, she's from our team globally, who looks after communications and parliamentary liaisons. And then we're also very pleased to have some of our customers here. Major General Ray Cummings, Kent, and Major General Ray Cummings as well. It's great to have them here, and they can obviously attest if what our services are all about. And I'm very pleased that they have also offered to give the same presentation to them, to the customer. Honorable Chair and other members, we had to talk to you today about our future mandate and the services that we provide. We'll give you an update on the financials. We'll do a slide on the CETA transformation and our strategic objectives and the CETA DOD relationship, and as well as the ICT's budget spend and our master plan. So I will ask Charles and my writing project to continue with the presentation. Thank you.
The presentation is split two ways. I'm going to start by talking through, you know, generally around the, you know, CETA and the business. You know, some of the initiatives that we have embarked upon, you know, the first couple of months, and also just the challenges before us. And then from there, I'm going to hand you over to speak about time, and then going to really delve into the specifics of the CETA DOD relationship. Now, CETA was really just a bit of a background for possibly the members here might not have much background. It was really, you know, established via the Metro Parliament. It started in 1998, okay, via the CETA Act, and there's been, you know, certain regulations that have been established under that, and there's been some proposals around the amendment of it. But in essence, it was established, you know, as the some sort of a common shared service platform for ICT for governments. In the sense that, you know, prior to its inception, you know, every government department had its own IT department. And now, in terms of, you know, effectiveness and efficiency, that was not seen as a best way, as a best combination, you know, in terms of running the IT operations for government. So it was established as like an umbrella for this, to consolidate, you know, all these competencies and derive efficiencies out of that. Now, in terms of the objectives, as I say, it's really about the, you know, the improvement of service delivery to the public and the promotion of efficiency to the department. So it runs really around, you know, the administration of government in terms of, you know, efficiency in the back office, and also extending the benefits to the public out there. Because, you know, the, you know, fine-tuning the administration of government should really translate into, you know, an enhanced experience for the citizen out there. So now our objective is really twofold. It's around, you know, as I say, enhancing the administration and also ensuring that the citizen benefits at the end of the day. In terms of the funding, we are not a funded institution. So basically, we need to make sure that in our operations, we are self-sustaining. Okay? And obviously, you know, not making, you know, credit surpluses, but the surplus must be enough to actually fund, you know, some of the initiatives, you know, like the digitalization project going forward, to make sure that we are indeed, you know, keeping in touch with the latest technology going forward, make sure that we retrain, you know, our people, so that they are, you know, the skills that they possess are relevant to the project that we run at that point in time. Now, we, as a fundamental also, you know, the combination of SICA and CISOA because of the government, the ICT out of areas. What it really says is that, you know, if you go to the foundation on the government architecture, we basically have established a common infrastructure for government, and in terms of you know, the networks and the hosting facility, so that, you know, if instead of, you know, every government department running its own mainframe, for instance, we have one, we have the one or several mainframes which are shared across the government department, and in terms of, you know, connectivity, we have like a single network facility that connects the whole of government. And in terms of, you know, the architectural standards for enterprise architecture, we make sure that, you know, we're running on the same methodology, so running on the same standards, and to make sure that, you know, if the different systems within the different government departments are on the same sort of architecture, the same standards, then the issue of joining them up to become completely become easier. We then need to come to the actual pillars of this structure here. Now, also security, I mean, being a provider of the service to government, security becomes a very key aspect of our mission. Interoperability, I mean, we work with several government departments, and it can only enhance, you know, the management of faith to make sure that, you know, the information availability within the education environment, for instance. And let us say that in a, you know, a performance in a particular school, and if you can overlay the data on the health statistics, you might find that, you know, from the Department of Health, if you can to analyze the fact that in that area, actually there was an outbreak of some sort of, you know, epidemic. Then you overlay this, you know, data from, you know, the economic environment, you find that actually the economic activity has been quite low in that area. Then you can start to understand, like, hey, well, you know, the reason of poor performance in this area is because, you know, people haven't been well, people don't have jobs, you know. This, and you can overlay this, some kind of state, and that, you know, there's been a high level of crime in that area. Then you can really start with, you know, coming up with, now, the real intervention from the benefit of government to say how we sort this thing out. So it's a... Sorry about that. And then I work for duplication. For duplication, as I said, with the various government departments, there is a lot of commonalities around different government departments. For instance, every government department would run HR. Every government department would run systems around finance. You know, every government department would run systems around the logistics. But now, if that's the way of doing it, probably not. Because the processes are fairly similar. So what you do around that, then you extract, you know, some of those common processes, some of those transactional processes under one umbrella, and reduce the duplication. Have one system that performs a certain common function across the whole of government. That is around that layer of duplication. Now, the next one then being economies of scale. Economies of scale, we mandated to provide the procurement service for government. Now, you know, with the critical mass that we've got, the buying power that we've got, you know, as government as a whole, it gets easier and better to negotiate when we go and procure, you know, IT solutions. Because now, coming with that whole critical mass, we can really bring the prices down. So we play a critical role in ensuring that, you know, we derive those economies of scale from, you know, the whole concerted effort. Now, why are we doing that? Because obviously, we do not deliver the service on our own as teachers. We've got partners out there. And, you know, and our social conscience tells us that, you know, it's even imperative that we show that there is a sustainability in, you know, the involvement of the EE in the whole provision of the service to government. So we involve, you know, a lot of the PE and the whole companies in terms of providing that service going forward. If I now go to the room out there, it's really around now the benefits that are yielded by this structure here. The benefits are that, you know, governments will then spend lower, you know, will spend less on IT due to this. And the productivity will increase because now we're enabling, you know, the manager of government with the tools to be able to do their jobs, you know, more effectively, more efficiently. And as I said, that at the end of the day, the real customer becomes the citizen out there. Now the citizen needs to have like an enhanced experience from the capabilities that we put down the market structures out there. Now, that's why if I may take you through our catalog of procure services. The list is not very exhaustive, because in an IT environment, you know, it's difficult. It's not like in a retailing environment, you can, you know, go down to the single test unit and say that you've got you're selling only this and that, and that. You know, we can say that for the exotic list of what is they sell. Within our context, we can really categorize what we sell, but within these, there's a lot of you know, synergies, others can be plugged in, some others can be plugged up, but that's just briefly take you through. Transversal infrastructure, I mentioned before, by way of the, you know, the hardware and the software infrastructure that is shared across. Transversal systems, those are the type of systems like HR and finance, which are run centrally providing a service to the whole of government. Well, when I say whole of government, let me be specific here, I think around the national government here, okay? And some around the provincial government space. The local here, we haven't quite gone into the detail of providing a single line of what's called shared systems across there. Our partners for IT solutions via our procurement environment. Standards and certification, as I said, as we develop the solution to make sure that you know we follow a certain path, we follow a certain commonality in the standards, and we certify the products that are being developed to ensure that they indeed meet the objectives that they set out to meet, or was they just you know a development or just made you know out of context because somebody thought you know it was maybe a fancy tool. You know, we play some sort of a watchdog sort of role in that aspect. I have conversion strategy, you know, IT now, so now we separate the digital services from voice and video. So now there's the role of convergence, you know, in terms of you know, sharing the infrastructure that should you know, provide the price for all types of data services and that's a really lower cost. I'm sure that I think we'll go deeper into the different environment. That is quite key, because in the event of any disaster, we need to make sure that you know, all the information assets of faith are still kept in place. And then we also keep an inventory of you know, all the solutions that are deployed in government to make sure that maybe some of the projects, a particular department, they want a solution in a particular environment, they can go to that inventory and see, but hang on, it does exist in the other environment, so I don't have to spend money. I can just go and re-implement you know, what is implemented in the other environment. So we keep what we call the electronic the information EIGIS.
I'm not quite sure how it's said
for electronic information in the software information system, yeah. ICT research, we provide the ICT research, but this is not primary research, because we're not looking into that space. We're not how they can invent a new chip.
What does it do? That's easy, whatever.
It's an inventory, it's like a catalog of the solutions that are deployed in government. So that at any given point in time, you know that within the Department of Education, for instance, you've got this solution, okay? And also there are projects in the pipeline to deploy. In other departments, it's also something similar. So that you can have like a holistic view of what is deployed within government out there. Okay, now the actual implementation though, it's not really full on just the actual you know, technology to be able to what's called to capture all of that information. So it's only now that the certain times in the government departments out of the space go in there and capture the information so that everybody can put it around here. And ICT research, we don't do primary research, we're not going to invent a new machine, not going to invent a chip. But what we'll do from the available technologies out there, we do research in terms of, you know, developing solutions that are quite specific to the needs of the government. So we put it in unit that does it. And then across all the services, we contract formally by way of, you know, what we call the business agreement. And the service level agreements to ensure that we also, you know, we talk from the same age. This is what is expected from us. And along that, we also do a bit of IT consulting, and we train and support our user base. Now, the financials briefly, coming from the past 2 years and the budget going forward, okay. In the 2005-2006, we registered revenues of 2.9 billion, and then on the current financial year, we registered 3.3, and then we project in the next year, 3.45, okay. Now, and in terms of the net surplus from this set of figures, as I say that we, okay, the overarching said that the surplus before taxation, okay, is in the current year it came out to 3%, this current year is coming up to 6%, and we're projecting 4% going forward.
do we have that slide? Mm-hmm. Yes,
we said that.
I think in your information stack is not there. Mm-hmm. I think it's just to be provided. So it's sort of
yeah, we'll
find it.
Now, we've got several business units in our environment, which are actually segmented according to our clients, okay? Where we have several services, cutting across the central region, because several services cutting across the coast and so on, okay? For instance, we have application services, we have infrastructure services, we have consulting services, they all, running in the environment, in the environment, and all that. This is how we segmented our business. And by way of, if you get the split, we'll then realize, the Department of Defense Environment in this financial year, okay, the revenue that was generated from that phase was 539 million. Mm-hmm. That is before that. So it is quite a very important part of our business going forward, a very important line of ours. And then instead there would be similar figures. And then the national department would be all the other government departments other than SAPS and DOD. So those jointly, then they amount to just over a billion. Now, on the regions now, for the provincial government departments, we've clustered them into three. The northern regions, generating 49, the coastal regions, 661, and then the central regions, 190. And that turns up to our revenue and that we show the that we apply. Now, CETA, there's been a lot of talk, particularly in the media, that but CETA doesn't keep on changing. Why is there always the changing structure, The changes have really been necessary for at that point in time. For instance, if I can take it back to 3 years ago, there were issues around the relationship that we had with our customers. So the structure, the structure that we put down, that enabled us to deliver. So at that point in time, we put down a structure that had a very strong focus on building the relationship with our customers. And once that was established, then it changed into ensuring that we start to identify what really constitutes our competencies within the business, and how do we make sure that we really package those services in a manner that we can with our customers. That was the subsequent phase. And then the phase going forward now is really around taking a central role in the provision of ICT in government, as the central body, the CETA, to really ensure that that IT has the values that was shown before. We already deliver on that promise. Okay, now, as we say here, the transformation is really in a journey, not a destination. Okay? And then the approach was really to address and normalize the situation every quarter long. We address the situation, we started to best deliver, we normalize, and then we move on. Now, there's been a set of strategic initiatives that we identified, trying to us engaging in this journey. Okay, which I think is very much related to this point in time. What we realized is there was a set of six. One was to really radically improve service delivery to the citizens. That we find that we didn't want to operate out of context in terms of extending the benefits all the way down to the citizens. We didn't want to just end up with the admin of government. What if that translates into the benefits to the citizens? So now that was identified as a strategic imperative. And with that, we then took a list of all our priorities and we said, because we can only do so much within a certain space of time. Let us prioritize these initiatives. And then every prioritize them, we said, okay, we need to put very high on the agenda, all the initiatives that are around citizen-centric projects, where the high impact is going to be right down to the citizen. And then what we also identified was, to drive to the best demonstrated practice in people management and leadership. Because like in any other IT outfit, we've got challenges around the availability of skills. I mean, there's a high chance. People leave, people come on board. So we said, how do we really make sure that, we manage because our key asset, environment, the key asset is really our people. How do we make sure that, we use, best practice in terms of managing these people and honing in and actually making sure that we develop leadership capabilities in all of them to make sure that, you know, we derive you know, benefits out of their pay. So there's been a lot of initiatives around this. And then also there was an issue around that, you know, we don't know what Twitter does, you know. Why are you guys, you know, saying anything to us? So we really had to go in and overhaul, you know, internal and external communication to make sure that we are transparent. Because you know, we are a state owned entity, so transparency is really a imperative to us. We need to make sure that everybody knows what we do, you know, going forward. And then also creating an appropriate organizational structure and team to achieve objectives. They're not saying that, you know, this is a place that has been like two or three iterations there before, but whenever the organization is based, you know, all the objectives at that point in time. And then also on the financial sustainability, you know, we cannot say that because we are, you know, 100% owned by government, if we get into financial trouble, we'll just, you know, just raise our hand and say, can you please help us with, you know, funding? We don't want to act, you know, irresponsibly. I mean, the way that we're formulated, the way that we're founded, that we have to be financially self-sustaining. So make sure that there's a very strong focus on this one to ensure that, you know, we actually do remain there. Now, some of the high performance tests today is that if you look at the CSI, the client satisfaction index, we went out there and said, we want to just take a snapshot of, you know, how do the customers perceive us out there, you know? Let's say, we are government, they are government, but we cannot just sit and say, you know, but we all government, it's fine, we can, if we fall, it's still fine, you know, we all in the same boat. It's not right, but money is being spent at the end of the day. So we need to make sure that, you know, the benefits that are derived from the money that is being spent. So they make our checks there. So we said, okay guys, tell us what you think about us. And what we came up with in year 2004-2005 is that actually there was about 47% satisfaction in our services. And didn't make us happy. So we embarked on a whole lot of initiatives to say, now how do you really, you know, change customer experience? How do you deliver a service better to our customers out there? So we analyzed a whole set of issues, we came up with some initiatives, we came up with certain programs, implemented certain systems and processes, what certain specific skills on board, and we found that, you know, when we did a check, yes, 2007, we actually rose to like 62%, which actually, you know, made us quite happy because it was quite an improvement. And we continue to actually want to improve on this thing going forward. So, you know, we're not just going to rest on our laurels and say, okay, now our 62% is fine. We need to find out about the other 38%, you know, what are the issues, and really, you know, zoom in and address those specific issues and address them. Now, in terms of procurement, year 2004-2005, it took on average 242 days, you know, for a tender, you know, from start to finish. And, you know, customers, sometimes some of them, they would say, but hang on, why should I wait 2 months to get a computer from Vita? Why can't I just go into a macro, you know, and pay and get it? So what we did is we already revamped, yes, tremendously our procurement processes and reduced that number down to 76. This is like the average. I mean, some would really be like much, much lower than that. And some would be a little bit higher, obviously depending on the nature of the nature of the tender. Yeah, I mean, there have been tenders around the SMS, in artificial intelligence, the SMS, you know, how it actually assisted the client out there.
Thank you. We have also established a concept called transversal tenders, of which the SMS, that is where we procure equipment such as PCs. We establish the tender through a proper tender process, and then it's actually a vehicle through which they can procure in a very short period of time by means of a quotation process. And in that, then they've got different options. They can either procure, as we call it in the IT industry, the outright purchase, or they can go through a leasing process. But it shortens the procurement process tremendously for government.
Thank you, Captain. None of the finances have been through that. GovTech is really it's a conference that we hold on an annual basis where it's an information sharing platform where it's us as ETA, it's our customers and it's our suppliers out there, and we really sit around together and try and come up with certain, you know, objectives that need to be achieved within the public sector environment going forward, and we jointly work on those. Transformation status, I think I've seen a clear slide with the smart chapter, so I think I'm going to really go into those. Go ahead there. So There's a structure here that basically we've got the board that was the whole operation, and then the acting CEO, Mr. Peter Pertlavia, who really has his own office with the secretariat group on it. And then we've got four main executive areas, one for finance, that's my CFO, and shared services is really the divisions that are internally facing that enables us to deliver. And the delivery engine is split into two. The business operation just looks into the current operations, the current business that we've got as teachers. And we've got the strategic services, which is called the teacher focus, saying that, we know what we involved in now, but going forward, this is what should be involved. So just like a continuity, a planning environment, because now we've been often accused, but CETA is not engaging, CETA is not advising me, what I should do going forward. They're just basically keeping the light on for me. So you establish this environment to now, be like the top leaders and can advise the government out there, and just so this the direction should be heading. And if there's an issue around the money, we develop a business case for them, like we did for the ICMS, we develop the whole business case, and the minister actually analyzed and found that they indeed there are business benefits to it, and those approvals, and the implementation is going forward. Now, the government equity, this is general for the whole CETA, I think we're going to defend Cisco. Now, the target for rate was 50%, and what we achieved, we slightly increased, we got to 57.55%. On gender, we did well, the target was 40%, and we achieved 44.2%. Disability, okay, the target was 2%, and we also slightly achieved what we achieved 0.66%. But we also, really pushing forward to ensure that, it's an important role that we can play as CETA, in the industry of ICT to ensure that, there is a balance that is being developed for this environment.
Now, this was for the DOT business, just a snapshot as well, the target was 60%. And achieved a 49%, but on the gender, there was also overachievement, that the target was 40% and achieved 48.5%. Disability again, it was 2%, the target, but you achieved 0.6%. But also that as part of the whole corporate-wide drive for implementability, we really have got an exercise to make sure that these are also rectified going forward. Because there's also issues around, high churn, people leave, people come in, but we want to make sure that, we keep the key people as best we can. Now, strategic focus really now going forward is to really accelerate the implementation of e-government. And e-government now loosely defined in this particular instance would be to ensure that there is integration within the various policy domains of government. To ensure that the Minister for Public Service Administration talked about the single public service. The single public service can only be enabled if it's got e-government capabilities. And so our role as CETA from an IT perspective is to provide the technologies that will enable that there are linkages within the different government departments to ensure that, if you have to receive a service from one government department, there is a network integration where the systems are talking to each other. If they are not talking to each other, you won't be able to get that experience of a single public service. So that's our big role going forward. Also, want to provide something that you can say that you can achieve that, CETA, what data are you getting? So we now already developing competencies around how we can best advise our government departments in terms of the IT going forward. And then we are developing an ecosystem of partnerships and alliances. Because we realize that we cannot it's a big piece of work and we cannot do it on our own. And it also gives us a platform to ensure that as we involve the private sector, as we involve the TV companies, SME companies, we also ensure that there's economic development that we also participating in terms of the challenge that is happening for the country. Now, managing operations, we want to, as I said, to radically improve the customer experience of CETA and then focus on efficiencies and effectiveness going forward. Now, the present drivers is that I mentioned the convergence. Now, service orientation architecture, what we're saying there is that this is a new way of developing solutions in the sense that it really is about reusing debt that is already been there, that has been developed. So they don't keep on developing it more and more. So it's going to be a situation that a lot of money is saved for companies deploying, this is a particular mindset, it's not a good industry. And it should also ensure that, when we have to change things in government, for whatever reason, changes, if you develop the things around the digital architecture, become quicker and easier. And the government has mentioned about the identity management, the IT, open source movement. This is the major strategy to ensure that the open source really becomes an accepted mindset within government. It's also an area where a lot of money can be saved, because at an operation, so at the operating system level, for instance, this is really mature, open source movement. And there is really, there are no warning questions about what's going to happen going forward. Try to test it. They want to over everybody and test and try to deploy this at the top level. So I think our task team was around the task partnership, consolidation and partnership as well as around the partnership. So I'm a little bit rushing to the time constraints that are important for that story. Initiatives, I think, I spoke about those before, the feature of CSAC is really everything around the integration solutions, developing skills in the ICT sector, ensuring that we, and also the development of international diplomacy, because if you don't develop and manage international diplomacy for government, you'll find that there isn't any strategic assets that are kept within the state. And also strategic partnering going forward, not as at one phase. Strategic partnering is having some long-term arrangements, which will make sure that when we have to deploy certain solutions, it becomes easier. And you've already sort of pre-selected people that are best suited for that part of the business. Facilitation of government-wide architecture, I spoke about the July 12 of values. Now, it has been an integral moment going forward. The feature of that between ourselves in is really we need to maybe influence some people might say, but I use the word influence, but in essence what we're saying here is that we need to start adding more value in the government department out there. We need to be more proactive going forward, because now currently we've been really reactive. We've been waiting for the department to say, I need a solution, I need a delivery. Now, once you play a role in the game, actually, actively go to the government department and say, I've analyzed the environment and I think this is what you need, okay? And then also ensure that, the commonality in standards across the board, when I say across the board, I'm speaking to the three tiers, because that is also helping from that, digital role should be really extended across the three tiers. And then also, when you see that the execution and management, the risk is diminishing. So what you're saying is that, we need to involve more and more, the external parties, the companies out there, the big companies out there, that will enable us to do that. Because it's not like an excuse to say, we couldn't do this because we don't have the people. Because there are, the environments out there that can supply the people. Now, this is generally for the business, but for companies like this, for environments like the SAGS and the DOD environment, where the whole business has been outsourced to CETA, the picture is slightly different. We are not going to be reducing our execution management. Basically, we'll just be improving on the skill that we've got to ensure that they see there. And from then, if I can just hand over to Cisco for the huge benefit of that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, honorable chair members. I'm Cisco from Skype. I'm responsible for the defense business within CETA. So let us go and look at some of the details there. Right, if you look at the strategic relations perspective, it obviously started around about 1999 with CETA. Prior to that, the DoD had an organization called InfoPlan that was into IT, the police services had its own IT capability, and there was the IT capability in the central government computing services. And those are the three entities that actually merged initially to form CETA. And obviously the relationship is driven by a business agreement, which is the high order contract between the parties. There's an incorporation agreement initially when defense says that I'm incorporating my IT data into CETA. So from that is a governance perspective from a strategic level. Obviously since 1999, to sustain a healthy strategic relationship, things happen. On the CETA side, we have an amendment act which changes certain perspectives of how we approach business. The CETA regulations which came out, which also is prescriptive in many instances in terms of how we operate. Our operating model, new systems like ICANN-X, the transversal new systems for government, the financial, logistics and personnel systems. And so there's changes since we started this relationship on CETA side. On the ICANN side, a lot of things happen within defense as well. Traditionally, the telecoms world and the IT world was, shall we say, split to a certain extent. and that's also conversion to a single organization. We also sit with both the Secretary of Defense as well as the Chief of the South African National Defense Force as two major organizations, if you like, within memory, and they each have different roles to play, and those roles have also came to fruition since then. Their arms corps as well is also in this spot. They definitely play a strong role in the embedded weapon systems of defense and the ICT components of that, or the IT components of that, as well as the telecom as well, in terms of your radio and telephone networks within defense. And obviously with defense reviews and strategic guidelines coming along, the whole idea is to try and retain the strategic relationship so that each party is cognizant of where the other is heading, and that we look at synergy between the two to retain that. At the bottom, of course, is industry, where there's still the bullets and solutions for everything. And convergence, a concept like mid-century warfare, the developments within the world out there that we all need to take cognizance of. And really, to balance the strategic relations, I think, was very successful today. It has its challenges, no doubt, but it works really well. Okay. If we look at how we drive that relationship between the CETA and the defense, on the ground on the right-hand side, experiencing your defense forums, and on the left-hand side is your internal CETA forums. What is important is that the defense gives us the requirements, we provide the solutions. Okay? At the highest order of relationship, we have what we call a CETA DoD board that sits on a monthly basis to ensure that there is strategic synergy as well as operational successes and business performances in the financial and the money basis. Both the general business and also serve on that board at the moment. Then there is a very structured environment below that that deals with the contracts, the different contracts for the different services, which we call service and service level agreements. And there's a formal joint sessions of each and every service level agreement on a monthly basis, which is signed with per deliverables and metrics. It's a very structured, and in my opinion, probably can serve as the best practice, or really has served as the best practice of the way of handling a relationship between CETA and the bottom. If we look at the engagement model between CETA and the Department of Defense, it's very important to note, I mentioned earlier, in the middle lies the business agreement. We also have a business model, which is signed by the Secretary of Defense as well as the CEO of CETA. That just unpacks the business agreement a bit and ensures that it manages the relations and the service level agreement that I've referred to. What's important, there are two entities within the DoD and it's only those entities that CETA contract with. The Command Management Information System environment, reporting to the Chief of the SAEM, and then the Government IT Officer for Defense, General Victoria, reporting to the Secretary of Defense. But those are the two entities you contract with. They in turn provide services within the Defense Force to the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, and the medical, the South African medical health systems. Obviously, we at CETA deliver services to those arms of service as well, but we only do it via these organizations. All our services are also structured typically in a life cycle approach, where we've got with the government IT officer. Those service level agreements to which we refer to as a one series SLAs, and the services relate to strategic direction of the future planning, that's more the planning game, if you like, that surrounds ICT. And then you go into the two series, which is pretty much your acquisition, procurement, projects, implementation side of the business. And then probably the largest environment at this stage is your support environment, in other words, maintaining the systems and the infrastructure and the technologies that are running out there, making sure they're running correctly and sufficiently. By and large, I think the essence of the model says that CETA deals mainly in terms of getting the solution to defense, and the CMIS component and GCAP component within defense deals via service agreements with the Army and the Navy and the budget holder. I think that's the essence. In fact, on the relationship side, allow me to say, yes, the relations are very formalized with the scenes. They do need to be treated. It's healthy, it's governance, it's visible, it's transparent. A very strong element of contract management between the two entities. And I would area that this one looks at the things is probably from a financial and payment perspective the best step in the 2 days of the day. They pay 30 days and it's always nice there, but it's got to be like that. But in essence, it is a long-standing strategic relationship that has come a long way, and it's fully intact and valid. It's also working the CETA, and in particular there's a business unit for defense. There's a lot of embedded knowledge, not only of the DoD IT side of the business, but essentially also of DoD's business in itself. It also provides a continuity factor within the IT systems, obviously. So also quality embedded systems approach on CETA 5. The fixed component within CETA is ISO 9000 certified and retained in terms of the quality system. SMS certified. And as you can see, there is CETA 2nd largest one. Although they can't say. The police, I think, since I've got the top spot, I feel different about it. Just looking at the finances in terms of CETA now, this is not, to my knowledge, the total IT spend by the DoD. This is the portion that CETA particularly engages in. There are other portions of IT spend by the arms for selling, as I mentioned earlier, the embedded systems and telecom as well. But for this current financial year, it amounts to 546 million, excluding that. And as I mentioned earlier, you can see there's the one series, two series, three series, four series slots, if you remember the life cycle I said. The one series being more with the architectural stuff, the two series more with the projects and the acquisition. The three series, the product, maintaining the systems out there from a product perspective. And then the four series, some specialized services in terms of specifically user communities within the future. Just to look at the things, you know, people, I think the message is approximately 500, and between 120 and 200 major IT systems running within the Defence Force at the moment, used by 720 organisations within the Defence Force. And there's a lot of businesses within the Defence, if you like to call it like that. There's really a lot. IT users, people behind keyboards that utilise these systems, as you can see, it's approximately 50,000. So it's a rather large network with a lot of dynamics that goes into it. And of course, these users are deployed on the sea, in the air, on the land, and of course, internationally as well. Nationally and internationally. Operations in Burundi, wherever the Defence Force deployed, the ICT systems go with, and the CETA guys go there as well. That's from that perspective. This is just a different view of that. 120 to 200 major systems. This is just the way it's classified. The bubbles and the numbers mean the number of applications within that sphere. So on the top on your management applications is about 95. Then there's a host of other areas in terms of financial admin or resource supply, which constitutes the bulk of the systems, which is 80. And then there's a set of common applications, like for instance messaging, email as you might know, document management, office automation, and those type of things which are common which now have 12 systems. Just to give you an idea of that. The current number of projects for this financial year already registered is in the region of 40 projects. You can see there's a different environment in terms of human resources. Four projects for instance at the value of approximately 3.7 million. Financial environment, the logistics environment, health, corporate and unique systems, infrastructure, etc. So that's just to give you a glimpse of the type of projects that are in motion for this financial year. The structure, as you can see there, within CETA, within the Defence Business Unit in particular, it is, as it's stated there, basically functioning, looking at the transverse applications, which is the HR, FinLog, the big application. And then the corporate and unique applications, which are specific applications which the Army uses, or the Navy, or the Air Force, or the engineers, or the defense intelligence, and those type of environments. Some infrastructure stuff. The enterprise planning and support environment focuses purely and mainly on the project, and ensures good governance and control over those projects. We've got information management services, very high on the agenda in the thing. All these systems contain vital information that is to be used by commanders and managers within the things, and obviously to get that information then to enable them to make the right decisions going forward. And in client services, ensuring that excellent relationship and to keep the customer paying for that, and take them from much to our advice to show that we do appreciate the relationship. Lastly, the last area of this presentation, I'd just like to spend some time. There's been a long and arduous and a hard process within the things in coming up with, in all essence, a master system plan, which we both call the Defence Enterprise Information System, master plan, the data entry, which really takes everything, the current, the future, and the requirements into consideration and come up with one single plan, centralized plan for the same ICT going forward. And I'd like to share some of this information about this plan with you. Yeah, so I think the objective of the purpose of the plan is to provide one integrated departmental view and a single execution mechanism within the Department of Defense of all IT and related initiatives, programs, projects, etc. It has been, to a certain extent, on the defense side, just like on the 720 organizations that I mentioned earlier, there's a measure of segmentation which you find in systems like that. This plan brings it, is intended to bring it together in terms of a single execution mechanism for those initiatives. Some motion to break the board of these. All right. This picture shows from an architectural perspective, which obviously informs this plan. At the top, you've got the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and all the customers. On the left-hand side, you've got both your applications and your infrastructure. Some of those applications are common across all the customers within the same part of the logistics, and you'll find them in your HR systems. Some of your infrastructure, like your department data centers or mainframes, as well as the network, is shared infrastructure. But then there's always obviously things that make the Army unique, that make the staff unique, and their applications and their related infrastructure. Taking the whole pot together, drilling it down into one defense enterprise information system plan that serves to satisfy the requirements of all the constituents in the field. That's really from that perspective. Just, I think this is an important one. The driver is business, not IT. And I think in this, the defense, and obviously you'll see them supporting in those environments, the aim was really to get the business converted into information requirements from the business perspective. Coming up, and that block was a strategic direction plan, the yearly information strategy that emanates from the Secretary of Defense's office. And really, he sets the direction of strategic guidance, the Secretary of Defense, and provides the framework for this macro plan that's going forward and has done so. The plan itself is given over to the Chief, which is responsible for execution, the Chief of the Defense, as you know. And hence that plan is drawn up on the Chief's wife, with FITA and support of the whole process, obviously. I've mentioned the fact that it's cut down, I'm going to skip this one. Just to give an idea, it's a lot of numbers, but there's a lot of projects in this. As you can see, that's just the application projects over the next 10 years that's been identified. There's some infrastructure projects in the telecom side, platforms, database management, quite a number. What is more interesting is that this plan has been approved. You have to collect that here, the 23rd of April this year. It was approved by the Senate Defense Park Council to go forward. 2 days after, Honourable Chair, the 21st, that was approved. So it's been approved and it's been long in the planning. They always say the defense board is not fighting, it's planning. I think there's some high quality planning that went into this to produce the release today. If you look at the kind of money we're talking about, and this obviously contains both new requirements and also the sustaining and maintenance of the current environment. And over the next 10 years, if you added up, it comes to about 11.2 billion grand for those years. And obviously, that is not all funded at the moment. We are working with the things on funding options, obviously. Type of things, they're looking at priorities, But in essence, that's what we're looking at. The other bars in your presentation that you've got just shows you, giving an indication of what is funded at this moment in time and what is not. But it gives you an idea of the money and the time to go up here. So it's 10 years and quite a bit of money to go in here. Essentially, one has to say that the percentage has lagged behind because of funding constraints over the last decade or so in terms of renewal, in terms of the system and the technology architecture. So this is a pretty definite requirement. Right. The benefits of this is, as I've said, the integrated view, also compliance with the regulatory framework and the national legislation, specifically in terms of the ICMS, the ICMS Integrated Financial Management System of Government. That's on the map, but CITA is also project managing and responsible for. And then in conclusion on this plan, all I can say is the priorities are determined by the DoD and are guided by this plan, the whole ICT requirements going forward from the 21st day. And all acquisitions, and this is the big thing, all acquisitions and partnerships will follow the transparent procurement process and as applicable via the CETA procurement processes and also the arms call processes. But not all of those, as I mentioned earlier, is purely a CETA plan. There are embedded weapon system applications and as well as infrastructure that in all cases will probably go to buy the arms call. So as I say, this is the length of a long process pursuing a co-operative engagement of those parties. Both of the elite CETA arms call industry. And that is, that brings us to the end of the presentation.
Because my understanding is that the thousands of people kept us in the welcoming the presenters of the speakers. We learned that it's an organization that grown up from say 700 grades has reflected here. I would like to know whether the CETA has offices in all the country around. I would like to know the relationship between the CETA and the Department of Education.
Let me start off by thanking Sita for the professionalism in which they made a presentation. Even though they were galloping through it, it was commendable. My first take on this one, Chair, it's on their objective. The objective, one of the things they touch on is to improve service delivery. On that one, I want them to tell us, Chair. You know, when we pass a decision to establish this, all of us are excited and thinking our problems are over. But to our surprise, there are departments even that I'm seeing now who are reluctant to go through this. Now, when you say one of your objectives is to improve service delivery, why the clients are complaining, the two don't meet you. I want them to categorically tell us as to what is it that are going to do to make sure that the departments are no more mourning about their service. I want to cite one example, Shepherd. We visited the disaster management center in Tutore. They openly told us to say no one to visit because there are CLPs in that center. They don't need that kind of service because whatever happens, they want someone to jump as quickly as they can. Now, we'll be very surprised to be convinced of the committee to say everything is done now, we can smile from here to here. Following from that surprise is to find out from the system how many departments had popped out of you because of the situation. I'm based this in what you said on slide number 9. How many departments or institutions have opted out of you because I know some departments, only by the hearing, we posed questions to some departments. They often said, yes, but allow us to go to change because, as my colleague said over there, we have our own mechanism now to change. We're no more crowded, we can run. Now, on slide number 21, we are talking of skill development. There was a time where CETA went around the country to recruit some youth, train them, and I want to find out how far are we now and which provinces are they targeting on now to be specific. I want to go here to their CETA transformation. Looking specifically at their retention strategy. I don't want to count it. One of those who saw CETA being established in the leadership there. But when I look now, I don't know how many of those of us still there in CETA. They're gone. They're gone when I'm sure. what is your changing strategy? Because you can't be a training field for other departments or other institutions. And then again, the new place that I go to make like that, you retain those rare skills in the system. That is on slide number 11. Now, what the service has said under slide number 6 is that they are saying there are no proven corruption. There are a few complaints. I wish I didn't say this one, because the number of things that I can't say in this meeting is because the cases are still on. There are no proven corruption. Maybe let me say this, we'll talk it some other time. But, I wish I didn't say this sentence. Now, the Auditor General in this report of the AG, he complained about some irregularities, complained about Twitter. Let me find out actually. What measures are you going to put in place to correct all the things that the AG identified as wrong in Twitter? Those mechanisms, because we'll be glad to say now we are a well-oiled machine, we can run on our own. But there are things that are in this AG's report that are set. For example, the supply chain management and some other things. I can't get all of them. So, because of time, maybe let me just stick to only this one. I know my just time, when we're going to have the whole day with Peter, just talk about things, Jeff, and then, because there are many questions, Jeff, that we can have. We can engage with. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to echo the words of the Honourable Mokwena, because of the quality of the presentation. And I've got some questions on a few slides. Slide number 5. Slide number 5. The presenter said that the CETA mainly deals with the government departments. But one of the items they mentioned was that they will have citizen convenience. So my question is, how do they interact with the public, and how is their services accessible to the public? Question number 1. And on slide number 16, I just want to turn to that slide. On slide number 16, it is mentioned a lot of percentage in terms of EE target performances. The question is, it's good and well to put the percentage there, but what is the real number? All the people, 49% equates to 100 or 2,000 or 2 million. What is the number in that regard? And then on slide 25, the presentation gives us a very good SWOT analysis of the whole CETA section. But I only heard of the strengths and the opportunities, but nothing about the weaknesses and the threats of CETA. Can they elaborate on the weaknesses? As the Honorable Mokwena asked, what is the problem they encountered over the years? So that will be a threat to them for the future. Then slide number 30. Yes, the Honorable Bihari asked about the organizations. They mentioned 720 organizations as themselves or offered by them. My question is, do they include the NEL and Arms Corps for that matter? Right. Then on slide 31, so to the next one. There's a lot of communications between the different departments with computers, and linkages between them. My question is, are these linkages and computer systems, are they virus-proof, hacker-proof, and spy-proof? You know, we are dealing with the sensitive nerve of the nation, and my question is it penetrable by other spies across the world so that they cannot, you know, give away our secretive information regarding our capabilities, defense capabilities? Then maybe the last one, Chairperson. The last presenter, the book memorandum, the book source, okay, said that we lag behind. Defense lag behind in terms of the renewal and technology. My question is, how will that lagging behind impact on our combat readiness and on the best practice model? Thank you, sir.
Sometimes it takes a lot of progress
have a set of all your time. People are not coming in that way. That was 15. That we have. And it's pretty much like that. You know, why don't you have a different even if you can be
talking to them about myself?
I know that enough that you can
avoid it. What happened about myself?
You have a
problem. And I was
talking about it. I
can't imagine.
You need to be able to say, what has happened to the others? How many people have been there? How many people have been there?
I'm not right about 15.
That was 15 years
ago.
I know. The separation of the when the separation you are asked to put the separation report. No one told that there's no report that they can cut size, but that's how the people that we want to do that report. So you could be able to do this report. If you have it, we will be able to do this report. So keep that report in support that there's somebody that is lying to Parliament. Well, those issues are very much important, but they really keep coming down to what you want to do. So, let me leave it to that now. I'm so glad to be able to say that. How much does it cost to pay for that? Then you relate to the department, DOC, how much they spend to maintain the payment of the company? How much do they cost to sustain the payment? Give us the cost. Every letter that you see, you should say how much you spend on that agreement. How much do you spend?
Yes, thank you, Honorable Member. May I receive that to receive the dedication? This is the first time that we have this. And we are hoping that in the future we will be able to get the submission. Would have more information about the service that we provide for the government and generally to the country. We may very welcome the challenges that you are facing. And we trust that as and when we continue to interact with people, we will be able to have a much more understanding of the area in which we are actually assisting in the development and the maintenance of our, you know, IT, you know, capability in terms of it. I was looking at your report. In page 10, where it indicated that in 2012, the CITA was able to prevent 8 million malicious code of emails, which were dropped, which were invaded. And one of the most effective viruses which invaded most of the developed countries, the solar virus, is said to be one of those that was prevented from actually invading our country. Now, I just wanted to know if all these were inherited in secret way, or were they inherited in a country for us. But my question is general. We'll just ask the questions and then give the delegation from Sweden to respond. At the end, we'll close the meeting and we'll go back to what we've been doing. they will all understand that this information is coming, you know, in acquaintance.
So let me just ask then this question on page 13 of the presentation. When you speak about the board, I was interested that to post it on the board. And then the problem that we have is that the human resource in the experience, they were here in the presentation. Now, they have got data or questionnaires, who's supposed to go on pension. It's mostly the veterans. And some of those veterans who are on pension have not yet received the pension payment. And the problem of capturing the human resource. And then the human resource says, we are not responsible because we have got the information about it. The agency that's expected is going to pay out the trailer. Our system between us as the NTF human resource and treasure cannot be that is what we, that is the report that we receive. That on one hand, treasure is a database of the service, of military personnel who have exited. But those people are not getting paid. And on the other hand, human resource says, these are people who have completed so many years ago and they have not been paid. It's not our responsibility, it's the responsibility of children. Now, I'm not sure why the system is not comfortable in the presence of such a very good situation. You know, we have extended and deal with it. We ask them when they're here to provide us information about the type of pension scheme that has been unveiled for our military veterans. What does that most of them were not quite happy and took issue with the type of pension scheme that was unveiled. It's a five-day type of pension scheme. On the other hand, they were talking about the former KKCW personnel who were given very lucrative pensions, but they did not have such information at their disposal. So apparently that information was not raised in the communication. It was quite disturbing because in the allocation and the discussion on making the proposal for pension, we have to compare, you know, in terms of how the non-fiscal forces and also the former FAEGF personnel on their exit, how they the pension scheme or how they figure out one plan, so that they can be able to establish and take into that information. So DOT up to now is taking into information. And we are saying those are areas which we request data to get involved in, so that tell them when we require information. Information should be readily available. And I want to ask a question with respect to the other problems of corruption or the absence of in a situation where the HR office have got vacancies in the city
4 years before some of your arrival and has the most experience. Can those prisoners come on board? And then once we are looking at them, they begin to make work for their own company. And once they begin to get a tender, the same prisoner who has been kept with them for 3 years ago, late because he owns their own company, there was a tender in the future of something like 4 million. Do we have situations like those? And then, if your involvement in Africa, the other one will know if you are involved in Africa. And if you are involved, what project? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give the team an opportunity to also respond to the other sections, but I think there's quite a few things that I certainly would like to respond to first. And thank you for contextualizing this as being one of the first meetings that we're having. It's for us, it's extremely useful to have the engagement, and I firmly believe that we should have more engagement, because the aspect that came out of this discussion, where we came prepared for a DOD type of a discussion, but we get the impression that there's other burning issues that we should also like to have answers on, and we certainly haven't prepared information along those lines. So I would certainly welcome a further discussion on some issues that we cannot elicit any information on. The CETA itself is quite a diverse organization because it's a diverse community and a client profile as well. So by its nature, we are going to be, I think one of my clients earlier this morning said to me, we must try not to be open to everybody and try to stick to our mandate that we have. Now that mandate has changed already because the environment in which you're operating is also changing very fast. And the clients are requiring more services, especially convergence and integrated services. So from that perspective, CETA needs to be quite number-footed as well to respond to the challenges, and I agree. Said Honourable Member McQuena about the lack of responsiveness in certain areas. As a former government employee, I think I'm very well placed to be able to respond to that challenge as well, because I'm one of those departments that does engage science and technology from CETA because we felt that they were delivering the services. I'm firmly on the other side of the fence. And it's, for me, it's very pleasing to be able to say that from 2001, when I got into government to 2007, I can see a big change in the organization itself that I'm currently serving. And the changes, certainly in the procurement areas, the relationships with our clients, and being able to respond much faster. And also to the external environmental changes that are happening. So I just wanted to give you some background. So the empathy is there in some areas where the service is but it's not just Brickbat that has been coming CETA's way. Over the past month that I've been at the helm of the organization, I've had at least three interventions where CETA was called upon to assist because of our own technical competence and thought leadership. We have been asked to come and assist government departments where they are external service providers. And one of them, you have read in the newspapers already, is eNATIS. CETA was not involved with eNATIS. Mm. I got a phone call late at night from the DG of the Department of Transport, and they can you please meet urgently. I believe CETA has a capability to help us. We met the next day, we put a memorandum of understanding between us, and we managed to
agree on the way forward, and we even participate in the press release that we're covering next week. Just one example, there's another government department, the Department of Justice. They call us back, they also kicked Peter off the platform, and they are telling us now, we'd like Peter to come back and help us. I name at least two other government departments. One, when the leader of the PDP, the Secure Services, and they're also asking Peter to come back to the platform. Now, so just in terms of customer service, that's the one thing. But the CETA Act, I'm going to ask Cisco to talk about the defense HR systems and non-statutory forces, and how we can help them to maintain them. We have offices all over the country, but offices in most parts of the country. I just need to understand, to give an indication that CETA is, the CETA Act must provide services to national governments. It has options as well to provide, and of course provincial government. It has options to give to provide services now to the municipalities as well. So we'd be very keen to provide services to all spheres of government, and from that angle we certainly don't have a problem, and we believe we have the capacity to do that as well. We have certainly ramped up a lot of capacity. We've also got, I think I've answered why the government departments are reluctant to help us. The proven corruption, that is a mouthful to say to anybody that you, there's no proven corruption. And I think we must be careful how we phrase hotel. At the moment, of course, I haven't read about anything that says. When I look at the annual report, yes, it's irregular expenditure, there's also proof of expenditure, it's not in the annual report, so certainly transparent. We've made mistakes. But as a result of our introspective look at how we can operate much better, our procurement processes today are certainly one of the best. And but we can still improve it even in that area as well. So we're keeping a close look on activities internally in CETA so that the organization doesn't get embarrassed in the press. I, as an accountant by profession, I certainly look at the controls very carefully, and wherever I can improve them, I certainly attempt to do that. And I've got a commitment from my management team as well. I have meetings with the Auditor General. We just submitted our latest financials. The Auditor General said the quality of the information this year and the speed at which we deliver the information and the control that has been in place, they are already impressed by what we have done this year versus the previous year. Now, so, but if we pick up corruption, we certainly deal with it. We're looking at issues such as contract management. Now we're dealing with huge contracts, and contract management, project management, those are very important issues for us, so that we can prevent scope overruns on projects and prevent any negative fallout towards CETA and its effective government. So offices have been established all over. We've got offices in Cape Town, the Eastern Cape, and the Kwazulu Natal, in every province. There are provincial offices. But we certainly don't have offices in every town. But our services are accessible. And to the extent that we interface with our clients, which are, unfortunately, we don't interface directly with the public. Because our client base is, of course, the government department, but we have the enablement, we put the mechanisms in place for the citizenry to interface with the services the government offers. So things like multi-purpose community centers, things like the Tucson centers, and the walk-in training centers, we try to establish them all over the country where there's a need. But people free of charge can just walk in and get training on how to use the software and hardware that we have at our disposal. So from a citizen convenience perspective, those are some of the things that we are doing. The number of stores, we will make a point of updating our flight so they can indicate the number of stores, but my team can also talk to some of those issues. Weaknesses and threats, we have weaknesses. TISA is a volatile environment. It mirrors the industry in which we are. ICT industry is a volatile environment because there's always new things happening, and you must be prepared. There's a good Afrikaans word for it. You must be parat. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you must be prepared for all the changes. And no one's ever plan B or plan C. So, however, our weakness, I would say, at this stage, is internally that we have to package our service offering in such a way that that is understandable to our clients out there, and we don't confuse the market. I think another a threat to us is we have poaching happening all the time, which we're reading very few stuff. I'm very pleased that a gentleman like Tari sitting here next to me has 7 years, how many years? 7 or 8 years of service to the company. Now, but Tari has made such a contribution to the organization in the time he's given. The turnover normally is, you have people saying 1 or 2 years in this organization. Tita has, in 3 years, got to like about 7 CEOs. Until Madhusam Simon's case 3 years ago, and he stabilized the organization. And I take my hat off to you for his certain efforts in turning around Tita as well and making it a profitable organization. We've got to build on that platform that he has established. The first time that we had a CEO that lasted so long with Tita. And in a moment we are headhunting for the permanent CEO to take over the process that started. This process of searching for a CEO would have started would have been finalized only in September, but because of his earlier departure, we had to start early enough. And but we fast-tracked the process, so we just want to deal with that issue as the case comes up. But certainly, the institutional memory, as far as the board is concerned, the board members are listed in the annual report. But I can quickly tell you that our chairman is Mtenjiwe Chikane. Then we've got Ms. Boda Manate, who is a former board member, chairman or chairperson of CETA. We call, in Italian CETA, we call the chairperson chairman, if there's a preference of Ms. Chikane. I'm a board member, and then we've got Ms. Llewellyn Chan, who is an IT expert. We've got Ms. Desharan, she's also an expert in ICT. And Mr. Quinn Kruger, who is Deputy Director General in the National Treasury. I think, and then Professor Malwala, who is one of the leading lights in the country on ICT matters, especially on artificial intelligence. In today's Mail and Guardian, you will see that he's featured as one of the top 100 people that who is recommended to people not have lunch yet. He's a very eminent scholar. He's also got an award. A certified award, I must add. And so those are the board members, and I think we've also got we've got a couple of vacancies on the board which we're trying to fill at the moment. And so I'm not so quickly talk about the DOD technical spec issues and the changing costing. As far as viruses are concerned, CETA a few years ago, when CETA started, we had something like about 1.2 million virus attempts. At the moment, the viruses have been reduced to 7,000 virus attempts. We have not had our platform being damaged by any viruses. We internally have written programs, and one of CETA's employees has written probably one of the best virus programs, antivirus programs, to stop viruses from entering our network. So they can stop them outside there at the entrance of the network, and you have a much better chance of success than after trying to get rid of them while they're internally, because it's very difficult. And we have internally written a program to do that. It's a service offering which I'm very keen to take to the rest of my client base as well. The pension fund payment, I cannot give information on pension fund payment. We're essentially running government systems, but the pension fund Perhaps the first one you can talk about, but as far as I know, the government employee pension fund manages the pension fund, and that's a special statutory body that is not reporting to CETA. It's reported to the National Treasury. As an anecdote, I can tell you, I left government in 2006 August, and I'm still waiting for my pension fund payout as well. So, I'm really struggling with processes, and people are just not committed to processes. My mantra internally in CETA is, guys, we don't have a case of more than not about. We have to respond to the customer today. And if this, and I start to really recommend that, we can be more responsive to customer needs, but it takes time to change organizations and the inertia that is embedded in certain people. People drive organizations and not necessarily systems such as enabling the mechanism. So, yes, we must continue to work to get our best people. And the staff retention policy that is in place is, I think, quite a good policy. We have one in the company. But how do you challenge an external company to come to you and offer your executive double what you are currently paying plus share options that you can't get in government? If I, as a CEO, is going to earn 3 to 5 million rand per annum and I have share options in the organization, I am sure there's going to be a lot of parliamentary questions being asked. Why am I earning such an example? Those questions are being asked from private sector people. And we have just lost such a person. So, and one of the, I'm not saying the person went for the money, but I mean, if a company is chasing you for over a year and they're prepared to wait for you to come, and they offer you such a substantial talent, it's not, I think everybody has a price.
We're human.
Yes, we're all human beings. So, Chair, I want to, that's one of the challenges that we have. We do have a challenge approaching that is happening in the organization. We regard it from a positive perspective that CETA is certainly getting the attention of people out there saying, there's good skills in CETA. Why don't we coach those the people? But the flip side is also true. We've got to create internally the capacity so we continuously, it's a catch-up situation. We don't have the carrots that the private sector has. So, we have to work with the needs that are at our disposal. We have seen our performance, financial performance, we are profitable. However, to what extent can we use that money to pay substantial salary increases and bonuses to ourselves? That's the game we're becoming.
So, I often say to
people, CETA seems to be damned if you do and damned if you don't. Because we are trying to retain people and at the same time we need to perform. I'm very passionate about changing the employee profile, but what I've said to myself, guys, CETA is currently a 3 billion rand organization. If we position ourselves properly and we give the customer satisfaction that they require, we can learn back those people who have lost faith in CETA in the past. They don't know the new CETA. I think we are ready to do business with our customers. We can certainly love active customers and turn our 3 billion rand organization into a 10 billion rand organization and even more. The new conversion technologies are opening up huge opportunities for us to tap into a market and earn more quality revenue on a sustainable basis. And I'm very excited to be part of this organization because I can see how we can empower the citizens out there and also contribute to black economic empowerment. But grow the cake instead of slicing and dicing it. And at the end of the day, we're all unhappy. And the citizens of the country are suffering. CETA is an organization for the 3 to 4 thousand people internally in CETA. We're an organization for 46 million rand, 46 million people in the country. And I think that is the orientation that you should have in the organization. As opposed to thinking that you're also serving a couple of government departments. I'm confident we can learn those government departments back. DPLG, for example, we're talking to them at the moment for lots of services. And I can go on and on, but I'm going to stop there to give my colleagues an opportunity to respond as well.
Let me say that you are left with 10 minutes in order to run out of time.
Honourable Chair, it's okay. So you can focus on the defence-related questions, that's possible. There's an issue about the 720 organisation, whether they included old school or now, no, it does not. And those are the defence unstructured, if you like, industry structures. A lot of questions was asked about information about the non-statutory forces and on the HR systems of defence. Obviously, from a CETA perspective or a defence perspective, we provide the application, the system. We do not provide information or manage the information. We just ensure that it's protected on the systems and that it gets fed back in the sense that it was put in. So I would appreciate if you give current status of that information and where to go is regarding to the owner of the information which is there. If there are information that is sitting on other databases, for instance, especially, I think it was mentioned particularly, once the entity owns that information, absolutely it can facilitate the exchange of that information. But by and large, at the end of the day, whoever owns that information has to put that forward for sharing. That's simple as that. CETA can certainly facilitate that, but we cannot provide simply as we do not own that information. Okay. As far as the security, there was a question relating to the security environment of the DoD systems being a sensitive core. Absolutely, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, in fact, so much so that at the moment in time, the Department of Defense, its networks, for instance, and its data centers belong to them. Those are ring-fenced totally from the government network at this point in time. It is also not connected to any other network. So from a security perspective, what we effectively used to call air walls. There's air wall, there's a wall between those infrastructures and the rest. It obviously comes at a negative price as well. You know, the sharing of economies of scale in the city, maybe from that perspective, or the connectivity perspective in terms of communicating with other government departments, it becomes really difficult once you air wall a technology like that. But those are some of the challenges in terms of the project that I mentioned, which we hope to overcome. But it's very secure. We have not had a compromise in terms of hacking and viruses, officials are asked. We've had that little incident. Obviously, people, there are viruses that are getting used, but we haven't had a lot of service or compromising of data as well, to my knowledge today. Okay. The lagging behind in terms of renewable technology, and the question is like, does it affect the battle readiness of the
combat community? Combat readiness.
After combat readiness, I don't think so. Maybe other technology, in essence, because of the funding constraints over the last couple of years, we can just stretch the technology beyond it, maybe its life cycle. But it's done so effectively, and it does come with a pain, no doubt. But I think my colleagues would concur from the DoD that I don't think that has affected the combat readiness at all. The DoD CETA board, as opposed to the CETA board, maybe the main board spoken a bit of kilter in the questioning, is essentially the top management meeting between the two companies, which we name the CETA DoD board. It's not costing anything, people don't get remunerated for sitting on the board. It sits monthly, every single month. And it deals primarily, who sits on the board is the top members of the GITO and CMIS, the IT organization, the four generals, two of them which are present today on the defense side, as well as General Inforted and General Bradoli, which represent the IT component of or the face of defense, if you like. On CETA side, the defense business units, myself and my management team, then sits on the board with the general. What we discussed there, you've seen the 546 million. And the services agreements that underpin those. So we look at those if there's any issues that we need to deal with in terms of either party's perceptions, difficulties that has been forwarded up to the board to deal with those. We look at strategic issues ahead, the strategic partnerships, make sure that where there's global initiatives like IMS or national initiatives that this one can do. So there's an effective pay, if you like, it's a strategy meeting with some operational components we can. Peacekeeping, if I got the question correctly, in terms of the mission of the defense CETA in support, We do not necessarily deploy to them, but obviously technology and systems go out. We do know support via satellite from static locations in South Africa, as well as from time to time we send staff with military contingents to go and solve issues on the ground that cannot be facilitated at a distance. But it's not big deployments. We're talking about that on an annual basis, 5 or 6 people that are trading in different areas, but in conjunction with the teams always. So there was an issue about destination to nowhere, and I couldn't quite understand what that was about. Because the, what is the cost of tax rate?
No,
I'm not sure when he was referring to what is the CCDOD board costing the taxpayer, or what is the CETA costing, the Defense Component of the Services costing the taxpayer. Bottom line is CETA only gets the revenue for the services that you contract directly, and that's what gets funded. I don't know if anybody wants that on that tax. Well, I have it. That was most of the specific question. I think that you've got a thing.
If we have some time and come to some of the things that they have responded, maybe I could just add to what our CEO mentioned, specifically maybe with the questions fielded regarding service delivery and our involvement in other government departments. If I can just add maybe to understand CETA, I know there was a question regarding our participation in citizens. On the one hand, we say we deliver services to citizens. I think what is very important in terms of our mandate, we are an ICT enabler for government. So as much as we don't deliver services directly to citizens, we enable government to improve their service delivery to citizens. So our focus in terms of where we participate in government initiatives, because ICT is very broad, the focus is very much on those type of projects in order to improve service delivery. What I also thought I would like to add is the involvement in government, and maybe first related to service improvement. The things that we've done in order to improve our service delivery through our transformation process was very much on getting the organization to focus. Our acting CEO mentioned we can't do everything for everybody. And when CETA was established in 1999, that was actually what happened. We, a government department, expected CETA to actually participate in all ICT, while it's a very broad ICT industry that assists CETA to do that. However, in terms of a model, we focus more on influencing and assisting government. So one of the improvements was really to get a bigger focus of where CETA needs to focus. Second, and that relates to our mandate. In our mandate, in our act, it specifies that we need to participate in the mandatory services, which is the transversal system support, application, hosting services. We need to provide an infrastructure to government, and we need to assist with the procurement and acquisition of ICT solutions. And that is actually where we started to focus on. Hence the major improvement in terms of the procurement services, because we mandated government departments must procure ICT through CETA. So we focused on that, and we have put a lot of effort. I think the thing that we focused there is the government-associated procurement, establishing of standards and certification, defining the framework, and obviously speed up acquisition, because we are enabled for government. The quicker we can get solutions out there, get them implemented, get working efficiency to support government in that perspective. So related then to that, our service delivery also focused a lot on government issues. There was a mention made on corruption. Yes, CETA has focused a lot on defining its policies, defining its processes, and ensure that every employee complies to those. Those are the things that's available to our Auditor General, and I think he has been commended on all of that that he has put in place, even in terms of regulating the relationships between us and government. We have put a lot of emphasis on concluding citizens' agreements, business agreements, so that both parties know exactly what is expected and that we can monitor on a monthly basis, do we deliver in accordance to the expectations of government. The last thing that I thought I wanted to mention was related to Cisco's comments in terms of funding and what are the costs. What is very important in terms of the relationship, as much as there's a mandatory component, it's actually also a more voluntary or an optional component. Where CETA delivers the services and is being chosen by government on a competitive basis, in order to say, can CETA deliver it better than any ICT company? So the competitiveness in for government to decide who can best assist me is built into the current model through which we deliver services to government. Thank you.
Final comment. So CETA is a service delivery organization, and we have to be available to the country if things go wrong. So I found myself just to quickly put up my contact details there. Because I would like to be the first to know if anything goes wrong. And I'd also like to be the first to know if anything goes right. Normally people don't tell us what goes right. But by all means, you're welcome to check down my details, and if anything goes wrong, I want to be the first to know. Thank you. Here that you're talking about intellectual property, which means whatever I think you're obligated to should be intellectual property. Like the example that you gave of some wood raising able to come up with a car and use the violence. Now if that does not take that intellectual property, then I developed it. So it is my own private, you know, property. I can be able to trade with it into whatever I like. That would be the technology that has left anything that has left here. So our interest is to make sure that the governance systems are yeah, and that there is a proper code of conduct with respect to the intellectual property that the government has. So having said that, I want to say that we shall meet again. Again, thank you very much for what I'm doing. General, thank you. Thank you again.